Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we have special guest Toby Drury, who wears a number of hats. He is CEO of the Mesa Mundi Corporation, and he's also the lead developer of the D20 Pro virtual tabletop software. Some of you who follow D20 Pro might know him by his online handle of Owlbear, and he's a good guest of the show too. So Toby, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for writing me, Dan, Paul.
So, Toby, we have a special guest, it looks like, joining you on camera today. Who's that?
This is Genghis, Genghis Khan. He's a ball python, roughly 5 feet, you know, awesome. Able to consume small children, that sort of thing.
Excellent. Welcome, Genghis.
We are happy to have him on this episode of Virtual Tabletop Vipers.
China snakes, you know, early threats. Excellent.
We're a big fan of reptiles here on Wandering DMs.
Yeah. So we've been experimenting with a bunch of different virtual tabletops, and folks who watch our channel may recognize that we've been using D20 Pro for a couple weeks now on our Wandering DMs solo play show. So I guess give us an overview, Toby, if you can, or especially for folks who haven't seen it before. What's D20 Pro and what separates it from the herd?
So D20 Pro is a virtual tabletop, right, for playing role-playing games online or locally. It runs local to the host computer, so the GM can actually run it on their own computer. Therefore, they can run it for local groups, obviously not happening so much right now during quarantine, but additionally, it's networked so folks can connect from anywhere in the world and share the same view and everything. It's a map-first application, unlike some of the others, which have a lot of additional detail floating around, cluttering up the space. D20 Pro is designed to give the map priority and token view. So if you're doing tactical stuff, that's very nice. Or if you're just doing scene development, splash screens, things like that, you can put up a full image and sort of be immersive and help spark or inspire theater of the mind.
Yeah, awesome. I think it's worth calling out to folks that nature of it being a locally running application. So similar to, say, like a video game that you're going to play multiplayer with your friends, you might have to poke open a port on your firewall so that you can connect to each other, but then you're also not beholden to some kind of central server that could go down and prevent you from your game from running. I know, right. My 5th edition group has actually had a whole session canceled because D&D Beyond wasn't available one night.
Yes.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. We then got into the habit of always exporting our character sheets to PDF just in case, had to happen once.
Yeah, we had
as someone who's
happen,
in favor
actually.
Of yeah, as someone who's in favor of, like, I haven't run into that problem, but as someone who's in favor of local control, that actually really caught my attention when Paul said that you can just run it locally and not have to go through a company server.
Yeah. Now, that being said, it is worth noting we are adding in a configurationless server. So we'll be hosting a relay server that'll let people just connect through a session and connect anywhere that way without having to punch holes or whatnot. But it'll actually work in tandem, so you'll be able to use both the session relay server and TCP/IP peer-to-peer at the same time. So folks who have been using it one way can continue to do so, or who are comfortable setting up their firewall can continue to do so.
Excellent.
That's great to have options. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So another thing that enables, actually something we were discussing earlier, is the ability to actually just run multiple instances of it locally. Something that I know a lot of your tutorial videos recommend doing just for setup, and I found myself doing when I was setting stuff up for our game. So just run two copies, one with the GM view, so I was laying out my adventure, and the other one with a dummy player view, so I could see what it would look like when it was done.
Yeah, the other thing that folks do with that is when local games were more prevalent, you take a monitor or a TV and run the player view there. It could be hosted off the same computer the GM's running. And so the GM could run for their local group with a shared view that's player and their GM view. And they're isolated enough so that way when the GM does something, there's no chance that the players are accidentally going to see the GM side of it because they're, you know, full screen. And, you know, with our company, we started out as a touchscreen company before we ran into the folks who originally developed D20 Pro. And we sort of said, you know, your peanut butter and my chocolate go really good together. And so we started taking these touchscreens around with D20 Pro as a touchscreen-based shared, you know, tabletop.
Yeah, and that's I think that's the way Dan and I were first introduced to it, right? You brought one of those lovely giant Mesa Mundi screens to HelgaCon 1 year and set up a big game on it, and that's just gorgeous. That's a real real wow factor there, I think, for a game.
Yeah, I agree.
Unfortunately, go on, Dan.
Was D20 Pro like originally made for, you know, local giant screen like you were making, Toby, or were they online? Was there an online version from the get-go?
So it was an online version from the get-go. It originally started out as this one guy's, you know, personal campaign manager and a way to present maps to his players. And about 2010, this guy and his friends were graduating college and going all over the place. And so they all threw in a couple of months of work and built the core to have some way to share their maps and move tokens. It was called Ravager back in the day and was based off of MUD code with, you know, UI. Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic. So it has been an online application right from the inception.
That's right. Yeah. And then, so I met the team after their first graphical interface that summer at Gen Con, which is where I showed the first touchscreen that we had built with a Geek Chic back in the day.
Great.
So, yeah, it was all camera-based and projectors, and it was giant. It was,
That's great. So, Dan and I got to play with it a little bit, and I know that our scenario is a little weird and unique because of the specific content we were playing. We're playing some of the old solo D&D modules, which have a certain expectation of the rate at which the map is revealed, right? Which unfortunately doesn't necessarily jibe perfectly with a lot of the advanced features of D20 Pro. I think actually in our first session we used D20 Pro, I made a point to show off some of the lighting effects because I said, no, we're not going to use it, but I just want you to see. I want you to see what this thing can do because it's amazing. So we were talking earlier about that, about sort of like the different layers, the you know, different ways you can use it, right? From very advanced, like full rules automation to sort of more of a lighter touch.
Yeah. Yeah. So the development and the concepts fit into this idea that we have for sort of a digital ecosystem. So for your gaming ecosystem, you know, you mentioned D&D Beyond earlier, and your game was canceled due to character sheet access, right? Lack thereof. But that digital character sheet is sort of first tier ecosystem. Once you go past that, you get into sort of GM management, where you can build your campaign and have all your content, your maps, and everything queued up. So D20 Pro fits into that first tier as well, where you can come in and that next tier after the character sheets, where you can come in and have your map and your tokens, and then run from that. I've run plenty of games impromptu from a laptop where there is no screen for the players. You know, we're out camping or whatnot, or, you know, and I've just had my campaign handy, or even just traveling. What's nice with the application, though, is that you can choose what level to bring things in. You can just use it for maps and tokens. You could use it just for shared visuals, or you can get more in depth and fill out the digital character sheets, you know, automate spell effects so you can track effects per round, stat buffs, you know, set up equipment that when you wear it, it will modify your stats or cause penalties. You can set up, you know, difficult terrain that'll actually impact movement. You can set up, you can have a nice rolling cloud kill that every round the caster gets to move the cloud kill and it, you know, refigures who's going to take terrible, horrible fortitude damage and, you know, or con damage, I think, in 5th edition, since we no longer have a fort save.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's right. You know, and I found that that stuff is really just built into the nature of the application, right? That's like the big one that jumped out at me was the Fog of War stuff, because at first I wanted to show off the lighting stuff where I can literally draw out where every wall and every light blocker is and every light source is, and you can have a figure with an attached light source and move them around, and it'll actually draw these lovely like cones of vision radius, right? And so you can really get this very kind of almost 3D effect of your lighting. Versus then when Dan and I were playing, I was just using the simple Fog of War system, which is just these squares. You know, the easy fog, right? Yeah, just I just want to show these squares. Just show these. Don't show those.
Right. Much and faster. Ironically, there's a middle ground there as well, because again,
yeah.
When we've developed D20 Pro, we've tried to give you as many options so you can choose your level of involvement or prep time. Hmm. So there's a passive version of the advanced Fog of War where you draw those regions. In passive mode, the regions are just flipped on or off. So you can set a series of rooms or areas, and you can mix and match your advanced, your interactive Fog of War and your passive Fog of War. Mm-hmm. Even with the easy Fog of War, you can have those drag select boxes and polygon regions and have them either react to lights or just be flip on or off. So you can do indoor, outdoor, you can go from exploring the forest to going down into the cave, and suddenly you got to pull out your torch and shadow cast in order to see where you're going. Yet out in the woods, you can see just fine.
Nice. Yeah. It's nice to have a lot of options there. Sorry.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh no, I was just going to say, so in one of the things that's interesting, and it's really hard for us to make, to really express, is Many of the systems out there have a shader system that, they'll have a night mode or a day mode, and day mode is just no shader, and night mode is just a night shader, which sort of grays things out and gives you that sense of a nighttime, but it doesn't actually change any of their mechanics. When we were building out our Fog of War, we were trying to have the idea that you can have an indoor and outdoor scene, and then your map or what you're presenting or narrating is actually determining your daytime, nighttime, what time of day is it? And so I've always found it very difficult to we can't really call it a night mode or an outdoor mode because none of those really fit the current lingo. But yeah, being able to handle both indoor shadow cast and outdoor flip and expose is actually a very powerful feature.
So are you saying that it actually does it actually mesh in with the mechanics of like in 5th edition when you have like dim light where everybody gets disadvantage on perception checks? Is it actually enforcing that kind of stuff?
It's not enforcing it. So that this is also really worth noting. So in D20 Pro, we don't try to enforce anything. You as a GM can apply statuses, or a player can do things that can cause statuses to be applied. And that will impose penalties or bonuses. But when it comes down to enforcement, what happens is the first time you start enforcing any sort of given rule, you're going to rail against people who have a homebrew rule for some other thing. Mm-hmm. And right. we as older players and GMs may recognize that homebrew is basically where it's at.
Yeah.
I love this rule set except for this 30 things over here.
Yep.
And so, one of the more powerful things in D20 Pro is the ability to literally go in and change and manipulate the rules as you will. You can go in and create entirely new features and traits that do entirely different kinds of things. You can go through and change the behavior of Fireball to do cold damage, or maybe you want your fireballs to only do D6s or do D4s, or maybe you want them to do D12s or, any of that kind of stuff. Or maybe you only work in cubes because you played Minecraft for way too long. The other thing is that you can actually mix and match. So if you're a Pathfinder group and now you're moving into D&D, or your D&D group moving into Pathfinder, you can actually take the rules from both, pull them up, and enable them as you want across the board to bring in the pieces from here and the pieces from there that you like to make the rules work the way you want them to.
Very cool.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Let me ask, for people that haven't, maybe I should have put this at the top of the show. So for people who haven't seen our Tuesday show where we've been using D20 Pro the last couple weeks, when I was making a, as I've, you know, started very rapidly to learn about virtual tabletops that I honestly kept at arm's length for many years, I started doing a survey of different virtual tabletops. And obviously there are some that are fundamentally two-dimensional with, you know, counters for the PCs like Roll20 or something like that. And then you have some that are essentially 3D, like with Virtual Tabletop or Tabletopia, I think, are essentially 3D. And then with D20 Pro, I wasn't entirely sure where to put it on that continuum because of the shadow casting effects. I didn't know if those are actually being done in 3D or not. What would you put D20 Pro in the 2D, 3D continuum?
So just very quickly to give you a little background, my development colleague in the Unity world and I do a lot of 2.5D stuff. And so when we were developing, or when I was developing the shadow casting for this further, we took what the D20 Pro team had built and built on top of that to add 2.5D features. So it actually has a Z axis, which is in this case up. And so you can set the elevation of both tokens, lighting effects, and polygons for Fog of War. And they have an upper and a lower bounds, which is a very advanced feature for the system and doesn't have the greatest of UI yet. Basically what it lets you do is when a player is above a polygon in their elevation, the player is able to perceive down into it. So you can be on a rooftop stalking down into an alley. The player on the rooftop is invisible to the folks in the alley, but the people in the alley are visible to the player on the rooftop.
Okay.
That's great.
I'm really glad I asked, because I haven't used it enough to determine that actually. So I was kind of feeling like with your advanced level, that might be the case. I'm really glad I asked. That's really interesting here. Yeah. Which and makes it kind of unique, because I don't think there is another system that falls into that exact category.
I agree. Yes.
Okay.
I try to keep an eye on the folks who are sort of in tandem. Yeah, and I think of the systems out there, the next down in the advanced level is actually MapTools, who's been doing shadow casting and Fog of War in the open source community for, I was running MapTools at the Gen Con when I met the D20 Pro folks.
So I'm going to take us in a slightly different direction here. We have a question from a user about licensing, specifically asks, I'm curious, this is from William. William is curious about the interaction of the four guest licenses that come with the GM version. Are those one and done, or can we change who owns a given guest license? He says, can I let Tim use it this week and Laura use it next week? Before we get into that specifically, I also want to bring up, we were just at the beginning of this talking about how I guess you've got a deal going on right now, right? You've reduced the price, reduced the costs due to the coronavirus. So maybe you can tell us about that and then talk about how the licensing works.
Yeah, so very quickly, so we're running a tremendous sale on our licenses to try to help folks who are looking to do remote gaming. So we're selling our $70 pack for less than our normal. So our GM plus six seats is normally $70 and we're selling it for $42, whereas normally our GM plus four is $50. So the GM plus four, I think, is 30 something or 28. I'll admit with the 42 number, I haven't really bothered to pay attention to where we ended up at the lower one. But that being said, so to answer the licensing question, so guest seats belong to the GM and any guest can occupy a guest seat. So long as the GM has available guest seats, a player can log in with a free guest account that's included with any download of D20 Pro.
So
players
just
can
to be clear,
also purchase. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Just to be clear, in that case, what you would expect is, right, as a GM buy a license with some number of guests, I then just tell my players, just download this thing and install it. You don't need to worry about licenses. Log in as a guest. Connect to this address.
That's right. Yeah. So there'll be a guest license in the splash for the application. There's a join or host on the guest license. Host is grayed out because the guest license doesn't allow you to host a game. It lets you join a game. Additionally, players could purchase a player license, and a player license lets a player connect without taking a guest seat. So if you don't think that Tim, or if Tim plays in seven different games all running in D20 Pro, and you know this Tim character wants to make sure they always have their seat secured, then they can purchase a player license, which helps support us, and they don't have to worry about having an open seat at the table from their GM. So this is a right. The other thing that's worth noting is that we're not sticklers about our license. So if your group wants to buy a GM license and move that around between whoever's running, as long as you're not running the GM license concurrently, you know, that's great. We share books in a group. Why not share the tabletop, if you will? So
that's
the main
really
thing
nice.
Is that
that's
the...
That's what, sorry to interrupt. Okay. That's really nice. I like your philosophy on that a lot, Toby.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, this really comes down to gaming resources only work because we as a collective can game together, and gaming is social, right? So the main thing is the content purchased for a license sticks to the license. You can't transfer that content to another license. You can run concurrently. What will happen is that we'll get notified, and you may get an email saying, hey, did you know you're running a bunch of GM licenses at the same time? Could you not do that, please? you know, especially right now, we're not being super, you know, super sticklers about any of that, because the more the people can play, the better.
Yeah, that's great.
That being
that's
said, the public service announcement worth noting here, just from a support standpoint, we're doing a lot of support for people in Europe. And I want to call out that a lot of ISPs are moderating their non-crucial traffic. So, you know, we see people who can do a screencast of a game, but they can't actually play a game that's through any of the online services, let alone host a service. Or they're having trouble hosting a service for more than like 4 to 6 people, right? So just something to be aware of. Some of the ISPs are cutting bandwidth when they perceive that traffic is not coming from, you know, it's not, you're not browsing the web, or you're not running a critical web service.
Fascinating. Do you have advice to folks that are in that situation as to how to work around it?
Yeah. So the easiest way, so if you're using our software, for instance, or even if you're not, if you're just using Photoshop or something like that, using Discord or any of the other streaming type software out there, you can actually just do a screen share of your map or your game space, right, and keep that narrative going and do your... Keeping in mind, role-playing is theater of the mind. Tokens add the ability to prevent some rules lawyering that may occur depending on who you're playing with. But you don't... Those are all optional. Additionally, if you're running, for instance, D20 Pro, you can run a player view and just stream the player view and run your GM view, and then still provide all token access and everything else. So that way folks can still engage. I've run my own games in both modes where we've got players connecting, and then I've also streamed. I have a new group who's new to the software, so I've been slowly introducing them to it. So the last two sessions we played, I streamed my session for them where they didn't actually control their tokens, but they'd tell me where to go so they could focus on who their character was and what they could do and what the story that was unfolding around them was, instead of having to figure out new technology.
I mean, in that way, it would be very similar to, say, having an extra camera and pointing it at my tabletop and actually using regular old miniatures.
As a matter of fact, you inspired that.
Yeah. So that's... That's very right. So there's a nice real world analogy there, though. Of course, now then to do it with D20 Pro, you don't need an extra camera and a big table space and miniatures and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's really nice.
It's also worth noting one of the things that sets D20 Pro apart from some of the other virtual tabletops is that our vision model is actually based around that shared experience. So some of the tabletops, in my personal opinion, go a little bit too far the other direction, where your vision as a player, so you know, Dan's got his vision, Paul, you've got your vision, and Paul, if you are blinded, then you get a black screen, which is super boring because you can't see.
Yeah.
While Dan can see everything and is saying, Paul, watch out. Rather than relying on the fact that we can play as players. And so we try to give you the tabletop experience where if we were all in the same room, then the shared party vision is what is currently revealed on the map. and then what you can see is outlined by your light source and whatnot. So you know what you can see, and you also know whether or not you can see more, because you're part of the narrative. But the idea is to keep the conversation going.
That is really interesting. That is really interesting, Toby, because I really like that philosophy too. Great insight. I was watching a video on, Fantasy Grounds? Do I have the name right? Right.
Yep.
And whoever it was like, Fantasy Grounds is my favorite, and they're not part of the company, but they were like, this is my favorite. And they went on for about five minutes at least about, here's a feature that I really love, and that's that it does automatic language translation, is you can chat in Dwarven, and then it actually shows that message to the other players whose characters have the Dwarven language, and to everybody else it displays a nonsensical set of Dwarven runes, and everybody else at the table is sitting around going, I have no idea what's going on. What are you guys saying? I haven't got a clue. Isn't that great? And I was watching the video. I was like, that is not great. That is not a feature ad for me. So it's kind of analogous to, and I wouldn't have been able to express it so coherently, but that it is a shared experience. And even if your players, right, if your characters aren't understanding it, I actually do kind of want the players to be joining in the amusement at the horrible thing that someone just said to somebody. And we get a lot of enjoyment out of that. So why not share that with the rest of the audience?
Yeah. I mean, I know I've been in games where the player who can understand the creature or the person they're talking to, and everyone else is ignorant of it, says something that is so far off base that all the players are just shaking their heads in shame and horror, knowing that this is their doom that has just been sealed. But as their characters, like, we stand by our friend because we are heroes, and there's no way that he steered us wrong.
I've seen that several times too. And I mean, why would you want people to not know it? But why would you not? Why would you want people to not see the horrible thing that just happened?
I do want to say this though. I do like the feature. I've actually seen it. I've checked it out. It's pretty cool in context. But yeah, in terms of gameplay, it can be frustrating. What they're trying to do though, that's admirable, is they're trying to keep the conversation live. Right, they're trying to keep the players engaged. And this is true of every virtual tabletop out there, anything you're running. Try to keep your players engaged at every step, even if they're not involved, because otherwise they get distracted. If you're playing in a web browser, well, shoot, all they got to do is open a new tab and suddenly you've lost them, right? If they're playing in an application and they got multiple monitors, then you probably have already lost them as well if you're not keeping them engaged.
I've noticed that in our standard campaign group, I've noticed that there's a little less presence. There's a little less presence, and it's really easy to have some side task or thing happening that wouldn't have I would not normally see at our normal tabletop. You're right.
In a sense of old school, we were actually doing a face-to-face table game prior to the quarantine, and the fact that everybody had moved their characters to D&D Beyond meant that everyone had an excuse to have a device in front of them at all times.
Yeah.
And what I found was that there was definitely a lot of distraction going on that wasn't related to the game. Like, oh, well, as long as I'm here, I'll check my messages. Oh, I'll, I could totally reply to this text now or things like that. And so, With the digital space, it's potentially a little worse because you're actually engaging people in a way that can be less engaging at times. And so this is where, no matter what system you're using, whether it's Roll20, Fantasy Grounds, Astral, D20 Pro, whatever, if you've got a scene where people are not involved, figure out a way to keep them involved, keep them engaged. Whether it's visual, whether it's a handout, something to keep their interest with the other people at the table. Video panels like the ones we have here work really well. So if you're using a streaming service or something for your voice and you can do video, knowing that they have a camera pointed at them keeps a lot of people honest. Their focus is a little bit more. And it also helps build that share space. With that being said, I'll answer preemptively perhaps a question. So D20 Pro does not include a voice video chat system built into it, because there are tons of fantastic ones out there that work at the same time. What we did instead is we've built in a complete Chromium engine. So you can actually open up through our extension system, Discord or Zoom for web or any of these things, and actually run it from within the application. Or you can run it through your local desktop and, you know, use it that way too.
Great anticipation, because that was totally my next question, Toby. Yeah. I was just about to ask exactly that, and you totally anticipated it. So feel free to just run the rest of the show, Toby.
Well then. I mean, you know, the interesting thing too is that I feel like some virtual tabletops have tried to include video and audio, and it's not great, and most people I know just turn that off and use another app anyway. So right. I think it's very wise. Like, why waste your time competing with that? If there's a tool that works, let the players enable the players to use that tool.
Early on in Discord, we actually set ourselves up with a partnership with Discord, and we're going to do integration and all the rest of that to where our chat area would actually be Discord. And as I was digging into the code, it occurred to me that it was far more useful to us to just simply integrate a browser engine and be able to provide HTML content. So, so I went back to Discord and I talked to them about it. And while we're still officially part of their developers and whatnot, they consider the fact that we can just run their web app natively in the application to be 100% reliable integration.
That's great. That's great.
So,
great.
It is worth noting. So, just very quickly, I'll touch on that. For people who really want to dive in, create new content, or create, you know, you've got a homebrew system or a system that we don't have support for yet, you can actually load any of those web resources for a system and have those be present in your game, right? So, like one of our larger groups that runs multiple games runs Shadowrun, and we don't have official support for Shadowrun. And so one of their guys built a little PHP Shadowrun die roller that actually everyone logs into, and then it shares the die rolls for Shadowrun across the whole group.
Nice.
Because they have special dice and everything with the newer versions. And so those all just sit in this extension system. And all of that can also feed back into D20 Pro. So you have access to your character data, the map data, everything from the GM side can actually be scripted to interact between web and tabletop. So you could have, So it has a full JavaScript engine that allows you to cross communicate between the program, which is Java, and the web browser, which is whatever.
That's really nice. I mean, that's you know, for folks who are going to invest the time and energy, it's nice to have that level of power. You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking back to what we were talking about earlier with the vision of it being, you know, more an emulation of what it's like to be at the table than what it's like to embody the character and the sort of the dwarven translation text example from Fantasy Grounds. The more I dig into virtual tabletops and online play and what tools to use for online play, the more I realize there is no real universal hammer, right? That it really depends on what you're playing and what you want, right? Like, maybe you want super immersive, you know, experience, and so you want to see dwarven text come by, or maybe you want to encourage player and character separation, you know, or maybe you don't. Maybe you don't want, like, I don't know. Maybe you don't want a map at all, and maybe you should be using something different. Unfortunately, that means I feel like anytime I, like, the more knowledge I amass and try to then advise people who are like, well, how do I play online? I got to go, well, tell me about your game, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Tabletopia earlier, right? Tabletopia is particularly powerful for board games. That was their original intent, was a pure board game engine. Now, since then, they've updated it. So you've got things like Descent and Gloomhaven type games, which are sort of that hybrid of tabletop RPG and board game pre-built scenarios. But, you know, there's a slew of really awesome tabletop space games for board games, and then there's a slew of virtual tabletops for RPGs. And again, in the end, the tool is really going to be based off of what you're comfortable with, or what level of engagement you want to have, or how much control you want to have, right? Of the emerging technologies out there, I'm a huge fan of Astral, just to, you know, plug a competitor here. They're one of my favorites of the purely HTML based up and comings. But that's for a different style of play as well, right? So I totally get where you're coming from. The style may in fact dictate the tool, but at the same time, being a little creative about how you present is also fine. Like D20 Pro can be used for board games just as well as it can be used for tabletop role-playing games. Hmm. If you set up a free grid, then you can position tiles and tokens anywhere you want, and you know, you're no longer sort of locked in to the space, so you could drag pieces out. Markers can be controlled by players and or GM, so you could actually have your various pieces you move that way, or you can just assign ownership to the tokens. So whether it's something as simple as chess or checkers, then you just assign the tokens to the other player. If you want to have something more complicated, like, you know, Lords of Waterdeep, then you need to go through and make sure you've got pools of tokens and using a free grid so they can place it on the random places on the map. But like, I've played Hansa Teutonica using D20 Pro. There's, you know, which is so, a lot of moving pieces.
I mean, it sounds great to me that it's got, you know, all of this ability to be adapted and all this and extended, right, to support a million things. But like, What's your bread and butter? Like what is just working right out of the box that most people are using where you'd be like, well, you're playing that kind of game, you should definitely be using D20 Pro.
So D20 Pro was built for Pathfinder and 3.5 originally. So D&D-like games just flat out work. Anything that is grid-based rather than hex or free is going to work simply and immediately. You need to do a little bit more effort to run on a free grid, just that you need to be aware of how to make a free grid. So the character sheets built into D20 Pro right now are very D&D centric. They work for just about all the versions out there. Thaco is not fully implemented yet, but because it's a pain between. I know. your method is also coming in along with this, but
also good, even better.
Yes.
But I did notice like your die roller has advantage disadvantage, I think, built in. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's clearly fifth edition stuff's there.
Yeah, that was specifically a tie-in to our Wizards license. So we're licensed with Wizards and Paizo for system support. And so part of our agreement with Wizards was we would add AD to our standard dice set. So there it is. And it does its thing. But yeah, so but in terms of being able to customize the dice, you can actually set what your core dice are. So if you go into the rules options, you can say, you know, that my game system uses 3d6, and that'll be what it rolls for any default action rather than a d20. But out of the box, it rolls d20s for That's actions, great. Which of okay. course goes in with the name.
So
it was well titled.
Yeah. So I'm glad here we're talking about dice, because this is Dan and I love to talk about virtual.
This is the next thing
dice.
I had to talk. Yeah, I was going to break in if we weren't going to start talking about dice. So feel free to start.
Dan and I have a lot of opinions about virtual online dice, and the funny thing is, I remember Toby. I mentioned this to you a few weeks back, and you had mentioned that there's like a lot of stuff in the beta that is exactly what we're looking for. It's just not quite available yet. Can you give us a little peek behind the screen and tell us what's coming?
Yeah. So the beta uses, first of all, in the beta version D20 Pro, which is publicly available, the dice are rolled above the game log versus behind. This was the behind the game log was a let's get this in there, and there was a layering problem in the game log where the text was showing up above the dice. So now that happens in the right place. The ability to do challenged rolls where you could roll from different locations and have both rolls show up on a screen, potentially different colors or, you know, indicating what they are. That is definitely in the works. You had mentioned that as a man, we really wish we could do this. And I started working on that a little bit, and that's close to done.
That's great. I don't know any virtual tabletop that actually supports that. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, in this case, the tricky part is that the the dice engine itself needs to be able to aggregate and sort of cue the dice rolls for you to challenge and then present them when it's time. But at the same time, we need to make sure that you two have the engagement feeling of my die has engaged and is ready to go.
Right.
Right. Because one of the things in digital dice, and this is really behind the curtains, is digital dice and a random number generator are tied very intricately. You can do pure 100% physical dice rolling where you run a physical model and hope that the physical model is well conceived, or you can run a Mazier twist, uniform distribution, all this kind of high math stuff to end up with a numerically sound averaging solution that comes out with something that matches what we expect for uniform distribution. And this is what everyone thinks. These are what dice should do given dice circumstances. And so D20 Pro combines the two of those things. So if you're using the digital dice, you're getting a combination of the physics roller and the Mazier twist uniform distribution. And so you end up with a kind of nice hybrid between the two as options. If you turn off the 3D dice, then you're just using the mathematical model for your digital dice.
That was exactly my what's going to be like my critical question on this episode, Toby, actually. So that's exactly the behind the curtains thing that I wanted to hear. So like
your questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Without me asking, this is the easiest episode we've ever had to run. Thank you so much. Like how do those interact? So if you get, like, if you roll a physical dice, like my guess, right, I could make a guess is that like just the initial which faces up as you start the roll would be randomized, and maybe how much force you threw on it is randomized. Is that part
exactly
of what happens?
Right? Yeah, right. So we actually use the Mazier twist uniform distribution to randomize the roll, the starting point, and then roll the physical die, which is still rolled in simulation first, so that we can, because we do a bunch of number crunching behind the scenes. So I need that number sooner than the animation is done. And so, so we actually run the simulation, which happens instantaneously, get the number out of it, and then present the animation as it's been rendered.
Yep. Great.
Which is why getting the rolling against each other to go gets interesting, because now I've got independent animations that I need to make sure I'm queuing and then running simultaneously. But getting the dice above the dice panel is interesting, because now this gives us the ability to add another layer. So instead of actually making it so you're running the dice in the same simulation, we can run them in independent simulations where we have sort of a challenge layer and the challenge. So you could have a challenger and a challenge layer and have those run on top of each other.
Right. Right. Fantastic. So, I mean, I will remind all of us, of course, of the famous von Neumann quote, of anyone who uses software to develop random digits is, of course, living in a state of sin. But that system sounds really interesting. I mean, let me just make life complicated for you, right? There is random.org that actually has a physical, like, get entropy out of atmospheric readings. They have an API that for commercial products you have to pay for. Have you would you ever consider having like an advanced tier of pure actual entropy based randomness in the system that a person could queue up for?
So we actually use we use Random Secure for the initial seed, which is Java based component that takes entropy out of effectively the degradation of your system. So I mean, it does. It's there's more to it, but yeah, it has a pretty good history of being a good starting point. Place where I actually go to personally, rather than random.org, is I tend to go to anydice.com because it's dice centric. They have spent tremendous amounts of time researching and analyzing the variables of dice physically rolled and creating the mathematical models for how dice tend to perform, whether they're hard-edged, rounded-edged, die faces, and all this other kind of stuff. And so the actual equation that we're using for a mathematical model in the background, when I rewrote that part, is based off of AnyDice's research.
Okay. Great. Great. Oh man, so, this is I thought I was fairly well informed about this stuff, but you're so far out ahead of me on this. I'm going to have to research all this stuff now.
So there was a point a couple years ago when I started doing the DICE rework that I said just casually in our public channels is, so I'm going to do a DICE rework. You know, the number of generators, okay, but it's not great. You know, just figured I'd let people know. And suddenly I get the largest turnout of comments from users than I've ever seen, because suddenly I hit on exactly the one thing they all cared the most about in different ways.
Yep.
And great. Yeah.
Great. Dice are really important to role players, it turns out. Really
yeah,
important.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this question, Toby. With your challenge system, can the dice collide?
They should be able to, depending on what we end up doing. So yeah, but the intention would be to actually get them all into the same layer. So we're actually rolling them. So the current dice, the current digital dice renderer uses a single color for dice. Right. Mm. That's actually a limitation that I'm working on resolving, because if you want to run Warhammer or something like that, you need to have multiple colored dice. We want to add in full support for the fate yet to be determined, Fantasy Flight, Star Wars dice, which are colors and shit, you know, patterns. Worth absolutely mentioning. So the current system doesn't support custom die faces yet, but that's just a matter of figuring out how to properly map the graphics. To properly put credit where credit is due, our internal 3D dice engine is actually a fork of the Teal Dice. So teal.com or tealdice.com, I think.
I think that's the one you were just showing me recently.
Yes. Yes, yeah. You're right.
Okay. Let me push Ash's question through here because I think it's super important.
Agreed.
What's the advantage of factoring in imperfections like edge hardness when you're working with purely digital dice? Or if I could summarize, why?
yeah.
Why would you put this much into it?
So that would be a question for anydice.com. So in our case, I didn't put in edge hardness. We took a single model of the hard edge dice and used that, because quite frankly, going through and configuring multiple edge styles. So, as a side story to this, I wrote a program with some of my colleagues in a contract job for Games Workshop called Assault Dice, which was a full 3D, 100% physics-based, hundreds of D6 die roller for Warhammer games. And and we specifically looked at hard edge versus soft edge and, you know, all this kind of stuff, because that mattered, since we were physically putting, or virtually putting, 3D dice into the world that had the proper geometry and physics. So if you purchased one of these digital dice sets, it would be that physical die and its advantage or disadvantage in rolling. Oh my God, the rounded edge dice just roll forever, right? Because when you've got a small dice box and you've got all these dice colliding and trying to find a place to settle, the rounded edges were super annoying, to be quite frank. So when I had no customer other than myself and, you know, our community, I said, look, I'm going to stick with one type of die edge when we're doing the mathematical model for this. And that's going to be classic Star Frontiers, hard crystal edged, you know, plastic dice. Mm-hmm. And so, but even that's giving it too much credit, because the physics abstraction is gone when we're doing a pure digital dice. Teal Dice manages the physics in this case.
Okay.
We end up using their engine for physics while setting a random start point for our die rolling, if you use that model at all.
Great.
You know,
great. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Let
me bring it around. I want to make sure we don't run out of time for, because we briefly touched on the fact that you do have both Wizards and Pathfinder support, right? What other content from Wizards is available in D20 Pro?
Yeah, so Wizards is very focused on 5th edition, which isn't technically, you know, it's just Dungeons & Dragons, right? All other editions have lost in nomenclature. And so the support we have, though, handles 3.5, 5e, 4e support. We actually still have an importer for the old character builder that they had out there. So if you got your exports for 4e character, you can import those still into the engine. I have some first ed support that's still in progress. So in the beta, you can choose first and second edition, and it'll use THACO calculations based off of the class definitions, where you actually build out the THACO table for your, you know, instead of putting an attack bonus as a rate. So for instance, in 3.5, the standard attack rate is 0.5 or 0.25. Unless you're a fighter, then it's 1. So every fourth level, you get a +1 to your attack. And if you're a fighter, then it's every level. And for the THACO, you would literally just go and put, you know, 20, 20, 20, 18, 18, 17, 17. And because those tables are different based off of class, and they're math was not used in figuring out when to change those, from what I can tell.
Correct. There's some argument that it wasn't like collapsed just to fit in the pages of a small book at one point, but what ultimately showed up in the tables was not super mathematically coherent. You're right.
Yeah. Right. And so initially I tried to do some algorithms to figure out what the sequence was for different classes, and then I realized that not only that, but that not only does that anyway, it was far easier to just say you can write the sequence down. It's very fast.
Exactly.
So those are the systems immediately. For Pathfinder, we have Starfinder, Pathfinder 1, Pathfinder 2 support. Then for 5e products that are not Wizards of the Coast, we have Esper Genesis, Ultramodern 5, and we have the Ultramodern 5 Redux coming out very soon as well.
Great.
So, and again, all that stuff can be mixed and matched, right? So you could take the Alien Archive from Starfinder and pop that into your D&D game, and we'll do our darndest to sort of bring characters and monsters into the right format for your game.
Great. Paul, do you want to let me ask you William's last comment, actually?
I do, and in fact, I was going to comment on it. So, William asks, William says, download it, installed, and getting ready to play with it. So excellent. So here's my follow-up question for that, Toby, before we run out of time, is for new folks who are seeing this and getting excited and downloading and installing the software, where would you recommend folks start out? Like, I know there's a bit of a learning curve using the software. What's the best spot for them to begin with to figure out the software and get the most out of it?
So our YouTube channel is definitely a great place to get started. If you're looking to figure out how to navigate the application, whatnot, we also have guide.d20pro.com. And the number one thing that is unclear to people is that the index on the left-hand side is actually a collapsible, navigable table of contents for the guide. So expand, collapse, select topics, you'll find what you're looking for. And then finally, our Discord channel is, the people there are great, they're responsive and happy to help out. And
those are good places. I watched a lot of those YouTube videos when I was trying to figure out Fog of War. It's a very rich system, so it requires some processing and some thought, and it really helped me to watch somebody else go through it and explain all the bits and bobs.
Yeah, it has some components to it, definitely. Once you understand the basics, again, so there's a couple of different types of polygon types. The ones you care about the most right off, and you'll understand if you watch any of the videos, are walls and masks. Everything else you can put aside as optional and get to them when you're ready.
Great.
Great.
Fantastic.
Sorry, just go ahead.
So lot of great stuff there. So I guess at this point, any final thoughts on D20 Pro? Anything that we didn't touch on, Toby, that you wanted to make sure we talked about?
So I do want to call out that the beta is public. I post the links to the beta in our Discord channel as they're ready. We have a beta news and a beta testing channel, which you can track what's going on there. The beta is substantially different in the way that it plays from the version that's downloadable in our production space, in that the beta is moving from a play and push model where a GM would make actions and then push those actions to the player, which requires update times and on slower connections can actually be a little bit of a delay, to a more real time where we're doing micro updates. So when a player moves, the GM sees the player move as they're moving. And all the other players who are connected also see the player movement. And when a GM toggles Fog of War, that immediately is shared with the players who are connected without having to do a pushed update or anything like that. So you shouldn't have to use the broadcast button unless you're changing maps in the new version. And that's great. Just to move people between. The other, awesome. The last thing that is a common thing, just very quick. Characters on the map are instances of the characters in the library. So creatures and monsters on a map are instances of those things. If you want to save your players in their current state back to the creature library, you just drag select or control click to select them all, right click on them, go to location, save creature, and save them out to the library. The reason for this is that you want to be able to pull a skeleton out of your library as many times as you want and always have it be the skeleton. So the players are sort of a unique situation where maybe you want to back them up every so often or move them between maps. You can do all that with the right-click location. There'll be a move to map and things like that. So,
great. Cool. Great. So you've mentioned the Discord a couple of times. How do people find that? Or do you have a link for that? Or maybe you could share it with us after the fact and we'll put it in the show notes.
It's also straight on the main D20 Pro page. If you scroll down on the Discord icon, it'll take you to our Discord channel. But
cool.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've never been good at saying Discord links. You know?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Pound JKCXY 27. I don't know.
Right.
Quickly running out of Earls these days.
Discord.hash.
Dan, anything we missed on your end?
I mean, I'm really glad, you know, because it's been about 10 years since Toby first brought in, you know, D20 Pro running on one of the giant Mesa Mundi screens locally. And we just gasped, right? We all just gasped the first time we saw it. So I'm personally just really happy that we can get more eyeballs on it, as a matter of fact, at this particular time when, you know, people need, you know, something that's going to connect them to other people. And I'm just personally really happy that more people are seeing it these days, because it deserves to be seen and used. It's a wonderful, amazing tool.
Agree.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we've had as can be expected, we've had a massive influx of people since the beginning of the quarantine, and that continues to grow daily. You know, we're seeing a pretty substantial influx on a daily basis of trial users and whatnot. It is also worth noting, if you don't have to buy the application, and if our commenter a moment ago has already bought it, thank you. But there's a 30-day free trial, and during quarantine, if you need us to extend that trial, we will extend that trial while you're figuring things out and deciding what you want to do. Just contact us. The code for that predates my access to this logic, and so I haven't been able to rewrite that to go. So there's a bit of a manual. Sure, here's another 30 days. But, you know, just figured I'd let you know, anybody listening, watching, otherwise.
That's awesome.
Great. That's really generous, and I'm sure folks really appreciate it, Toby. Thanks so much.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great. So, users, if you have some experience with D20 Pro or questions about how D20 Pro works, please feel free to post them here in our comments section. We'd be happy to forward those on to Toby, though, of course, sounds like you'll get much faster response over on their own Discord. But definitely share your thoughts with using D20 Pro or any virtual tabletop here in our comments. We'd love to hear.
Definitely. And as usual, remember that you can like and follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch on each of those services by the handle Wandering DMs.
Our show is also available as an audio-only podcast format. You can find those podcasts on our website at wanderingdms.com or a variety of podcast carriers such as iTunes or Google Podcast. If you are watching, or rather listening, to this show on one of those carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us. That helps us a lot.
It really does. So thanks one more time to Toby for joining us today. I have really had my mind expanded by how deeply you have thought about the virtual tabletop space. So I think that was really useful to me and anybody listening or watching. Remember that for our viewers, you can go to d20pro.com to see D20 Pro and demo it for 30 days or more. Remember that they do have a sale going on at a fairly steep discount throughout the lockdown period here, which I think is a really great idea. And again, thanks to all of our patrons who support the show. We could not possibly do what we're doing without your help. Thank you so much. If you would like to join our patrons in supporting the show, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Don't forget that we currently have 5 live shows a week. We've got the chat show on Sunday. We've got the one-on-one game show Tuesday. We got 10 Dead Rats on Thursday night. And then we have Book of War playtests with myself and Isabel on Saturday night. So please tune in to any one of those that you'd like to see, and we'll see you at that time. For the chat show, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please, we hope that you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.